Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for joining me tonight. If you were with us last night, you know that we had a surprise caller, someone who was a personal friend who called to let me know that she'd moved on in her life and made a decision that took her a very, very long time to get to. And we applaud her ability to, first of all, be forgiving, but also be able to move on and get her life back in a place where she's comfortable, happy, and secure. So that was a lovely surprise to hear from her, and the thanks that she gave me for what I had to do with that. And all I really did is support her. She's a good person. She's done a lot of wonderful things for a lot of different people that I know about. And she certainly deserves to be happy, as do all of us. But I'd like to get back to what we talked about last night. I'm going to start over in case you weren't with us last night. I mentioned the two websites that I found. Mr. Oveas, who has very, very strict guidelines about rules and regulations and do's and don'ts in regard to bullying, and the fact that he believes people should be trained and people should be aware of how to handle what's going on. All things that I don't disagree with. My favorite comment on his website was the fact that you need to be observant and get the rest of the story. And I love that. And I do believe that it's a big part of what is missing in our world today. Having the, first of all, patience and the foresight to know that one person can't tell you about something that happened between more than one person. So I found that to be all true, and with my own personal experience, I found it to be right on for what you need to know when you're dealing with children, but also other adults. Then I read the website Bullies to Buddies, and Izzy Kalman, who has kept it very, very simple, which I love as well. And there are several schools, by the way, I didn't mention this last night, but there are several schools in the United States that are already kind of have initiated this kind of a program and have talked about it to the kids and have talked about it with each other. And his idea is that you kind of turn the tables. When someone starts relentlessly picking on you, seeing if they can get a rise out of you, you turn the tables and just kind of smile at them, turn it around, let them know that whatever they said isn't bothering you. And as we've talked about before, often that's enough to get rid of somebody who's just being unkind and just wants to pick on you. The plus side of that is you're teaching your children to be a lot more socially adequate. You're putting them in a place where they can't be bombarded by unfeeling people. Aside from bullies out there, there's a lot of people out there that just don't know any better than to say, that's terrible. That's a terrible outfit on you. That looks awful on you. You look so fat. Or people that you know that walk up to you and say, are you putting on weight? Or people that walk up to you and say, oh, what's the matter with your face? Your face is all broke out. There's a lot of people like that. I don't necessarily think those people are bullies. Those people just have not learned any social graces for whatever reasons. And they don't have to be a 15-year-old or a 13-year-old to talk like that. I have friends of my own that I've heard say things like that. So his idea is to let, if somebody comes to you and gets in your face, you just smile. You just react in an entirely different way. Now, last week, I read one of the letters that came to his site from a parent who said it changed her son's life, literally changed his life. It didn't stop people from trying to get on his bad side or his hurt side, whatever side you want to call it, but it did give him the upper hand, and I think it's beautiful. So even though Mr. Oveus has some great ideas, like we discussed last week, Bully to Buddies keeps it so simple and develops social skills, helps the kids make friends out of somebody who potentially started out being an enemy, creates wisdom, and often leaves the future of that bully in a whole different place. Last week I talked about my grandson, AJ, which I have done frequently, and I mentioned that he has a boy in kindergarten that picked on him all the time. And he came home one day about 2 weeks ago, and I said, "How are things with this little boy?" And he says, "Well, I told him he doesn't have to be mean to get my attention, that he can just be nice and he doesn't need to hit anybody or do anything like that, and everybody will be his friend." AJ is six. I said, "That's what you told him?" He goes, "Yeah." And he says, "Graham, I think he got it." So there's somebody who's 6 years old who already realizes that there's an opportunity to turn somebody's mindset around. I think the younger we start on the kids, the better. Now, the rules that I talked about last night, these particular things seem to be unanimous. No matter what side I look at, no matter what advice I read about, no matter what schools are doing, how they've attacked this problem, if they've attacked this problem. The main things that I'm hearing time and time again is, number one, listen to your child and communicate. Incredibly important for both of you. It makes a bond between you and your child. Your child starts out trusting you. When you quit listening or paying attention, or he says something to you, or she says something to you, and the next day she brings it up again, and you don't even remember it, the trust starts to fade. I hope you understand that. So listening to them and communicating with them, even when they don't want to, is a good thing. Number two is you have to get involved. You can't stay out of these things. You have to know what's going on. You have to find out. You have to go to school. You have to go where the kids are going. You have to get involved. Number three is something that Mr. Oveus said, and that's to observe and to learn the whole story of any scenario that's going on. That way, you can see, you can look at body language, you can look at the groups of kids, who's on what side and how many are on this side and how many are on that side. And you as the adult, hopefully, can make a much better decision about which way to go to help your own child and to help all the other children involved or the other work people, your other peers, your other associates at your job. Number four is to become the leader you want your child to grow into. I cannot talk enough about leading by example, and it isn't easy. It isn't easy. I have made so many mistakes in my life and said so many things that I so wish I could take back. Once it's out there, it's out there. You very rarely can take anything back. You can apologize until you're blue in the face, but you can't take it back. And you can't take back your actions either. Again, you can say you're sorry, but you can't take them back once you put them out there. So you need to be watching yourself and leading by the example that you want your child to be or that you want your peers to be. If you're in charge of a workplace and you want a copacetic environment where people have mutual respect for one another and treat each other that way, then that's the way you have to treat everybody as well. Very simple. Very simple rules. Number five is to respect one another, and that kind of goes with everything else I just said. Respect is earned. I'm the first one to agree with that. But you don't start out disrespecting either. If you're talking about somebody that you barely know, you really don't have the right to be disrespectful. So start out respecting each other and let relationships and camaraderie grow with mutual respect. All five of those things I found in different words, in different scenarios, but in everything that I've read. And I feel that they should hold true in every scenario, from a schoolyard to a workplace to a church to a club to any kind of social atmosphere where we're all going to share the space and be with each other. When I very, very first talked, the first night I talked on this radio show, I read the paper that I wrote a long time ago called Heart to Heart. And it's all about being kind. It's all about caring and not passing judgment. You know, the funny thing about judging someone else is that to truly judge someone else, you have to walk in their shoes. And that's an impossibility. You really can't walk in someone else's shoes because we're all so different. The shoes don't fit. So it's not okay to pass judgment, to form an opinion of someone at face value, ever, for any reason. So if we can do this as adults and pass this on to the young people, it will purely and simply be a better place to live. A better place to live and a safer place to live. I'm going to bring in, excuse me, as you can see, I'm still coughing every now and then, but much better than I was last week. Hi, Shell.
Hey, Renee.
How are you?
Doing really, really good. It was good to hear all that information again.
Good. And, I thought we should discuss it like we were going to do last night, but
yeah.
I thought it would be a good idea in case we have some new listeners tonight to to start over again. So, where are you at with what I talked about?
Well, I want to segue just for one quick minute, and I do want to discuss all those points because I actually wanted to discuss some of them last night. But I was thinking about a comment I had made last night in response to something Kelly was talking about, and it was kind of an incomplete comment, so I didn't want to leave it hanging out there. So I'm just going to segue just for a brief moment, and then I want to go right back to the list and discuss some of the points that you had brought up last night and again tonight.
Okay.
But one of the things that we had talked about last night, and I had made a comment, Kelly had, explained that she had moved on from an abusive relationship, and she was talking about the verbal abuse. And then I had made a comment last night about the fact that I had been in a relationship for many years when I was married, and that my ex-husband was also verbally abusive, not physically abusive, and that I had almost at some point wished he had been violent because I would have not tolerated that, and one incident I would have left him. But because verbal abuse is sort of nonspecific and not quantifiable, and you're not walking around with bruises, a lot of times people don't realize they're being abused when it's just verbal, and they'll tolerate it longer and longer and longer. And what I never got to make the second comment is that I'm not in any way belittling physical abuse, because there are battered women and sometimes men, although it's much more rare, but there are actually battered men also,
yes,
who live in absolute terror because they are so badly abused that it's actually life-threatening. So I didn't want anybody to misunderstand where I was coming from. In my particular case, I was not physically afraid of my husband. He was very, very abusive. He did try to belittle me. And I was such a strong person, if he had ever hit me once, I would have left. It never would have happened again. And there are people that are that strong. So that's what I meant by that comment. But I was in no way, shape, or form making light of people that are physically battered and who live in fear of their batterer. That's a very, very real problem. It's kind of one of the things we talk about with the bullying, because it's mm-hmm. that same mentality where someone would look to physically harm someone else because of their own issues, and they don't even realize how abusive they're being. So I just wanted to clarify that I was not making light of physical abuse.
Well, from a personal point of view, I did not take it that way. I understood what you were talking about, and I'm pretty sure Kelly did as well, but I do appreciate your straightening that out, because I think that's true of both of us. We are aware, and because we are not kids, we know that both things go on, and sometimes chronically in some relationships, and they are different, but they are also the same. So I don't think there was any misunderstanding there, but I'm glad you reiterated everything so that we're on the same path. Now,
okay, good.
Okay, so as I told you, and I haven't shared this yet, I did. Izzy Kalman did call me back, but I missed his call, so I called him again, and I've not heard from him. But he called last night on the phone that I use to do the radio show, which I can't answer when I'm on the radio show.
Right,
so
right.
I'm hoping I hear from him again, and the message I left him today was that I would really appreciate an opportunity to have him talk on the show and be able to answer some of our questions, and of course any questions that might come from our listeners would be awesome. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. Since he called me right back, I'm going to assume that I will hear from him and that he would be happy to do that. But we'll have to wait and see. Okay?
Yes, and I'm very excited about that too, because mm-hmm. I just think that he is a wealth of information, a tremendous common sense, tremendous wisdom, which is one of the words he used,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly what it is. It's just pure wisdom, such a level-headedness about his advice that it's really refreshing, because
mm-hmm.
so many of the solutions out there are not viable. They don't work. They're more theory than anything else, and his is just very, very common sense wisdom, and the success is actually in its simplicity. So I applaud him for.
Well, and there's also a very pronounced kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Everything
mm-hmm.
we're talking about. I mean, you know,
yep.
and of course, even in the Bully movie, and in some of the other things that we've read and talked about, and some of the things I've read to everybody on the air, you hear a lot of parents and friends say, stand up for yourself. Don't let them do that
yeah.
to you.
Right,
you know,
right.
And then we've discussed what happens if you do fight back. A lot of times
right.
you get in as much trouble as the kid that's picking on you.
Right.
Or the spouse. I mean, look at what's going on in that world. When a woman finally fights back and somebody ends up gone forever, they go to jail.
Right. That's right.
So it's
and,
that's
know,
a,
and the whole thing is that a lot of times when parents or any authority figure tells a child to stand up for themselves, that can be gut-wrenching, because if they're afraid to stand up for themselves, I mean, you're putting them in that position, you're actually pushing that child into a role they're not comfortable with. Because if they were brave enough, or if they had the self-esteem to stand up for themselves, they wouldn't be being bullied in the first place. So that
exactly.
kind of advice, without giving them the tools to work with, like we were talking about, you know, taking them in for martial arts class. Not not so that they beat somebody up, but so that they can develop some self-esteem. That's really what martial arts are about. They help someone develop a self-esteem and a self-confidence. And when you have that self-esteem and that self-confidence, you rarely ever need to use the techniques of martial arts, because now you have a different air about you, and you have a you almost have an air that would dissuade someone who was looking to be a bully or who was looking to pick on you. You know, they, we had talked about this one night that, you know, they've done studies with people who are muggers and who attack people, rob them and things like that, and they will actually be able to people watch, and they pick, they can pick out the victims. They can pick out the people that won't fight back. And other people, they look at them and they steer clear of them because it's somebody that, that they already see would be a problem if they tried to attack them. It's the same thing with bullies. They almost pick up on that vulnerability of somebody who is timid or shy or just not totally self-confident, and it almost inspires them to take out whatever aggression they have on that individual. So that's why it's really important for people to learn to develop that self-confidence, you know, and like I said, the martial arts is one of the great ways to do it, and in the vast majority of cases, they're never even going to have to use anything they learn. It's strictly to build up that comfort that that they know that they can be safe if they need to be.
That's exactly right. Confidence. It's all about confidence and feeling okay in your own self. And I can't agree with all of that anymore. I think that those are all true statements, and I think that those are all things that we all think about. And I do think that when you send your child out and you say to them, please, you know, you have to stand up on your own two feet. Don't let them do that to you. Don't let them do this. You have to really give some thought into what you're saying when you say things like that, because a child takes you very seriously. And and often you're putting too big a burden on a child that's already on overload. So there was one of the segments in the Bully movie that was just like that. When the dad says to him, you know, well, that's not okay for you to let them do that. Well, they just stabbed me with a pencil, he said. I cringed when he said that. And I thought to myself, oh, my God. You know, but here's dad trying to make a man of his kid, because that is a mindset as well. But in the same token, you know, then now he feels like, okay, so now he's got the bully, and now he's also disappointed dad. So... We really have to think about how we explain things and how we discuss things and what kind of answers we give to our kids. That's why I love this whole idea. You know, and you mentioned the first time I talked about this, that one segment, and I think Gary did it as well. Remember when the principal asked the two kids to shake hands? In the movie, you didn't watch Bully, did you?
I haven't watched it yet.
Okay.
I actually want to get to it this weekend.
Okay. There, I'll make sure I'll give you one of the videos Saturday morning. But it's, you know, the principal is trying to, she realizes one kid is a bit of a trouble starter. And but she said to the other kid, she's actually trying to do this, what Izzy is suggesting, that they make friends.
Right.
But you can't do it like that. It has to come from the one that's being harassed. He has to turn the tables.
Yes, exactly. Because otherwise, it's almost like you're making light of the wrongful act, and now the person who was being victimized is like, well, what the heck? I mean, it's like nobody even cares. You know, they're just like turning their back on me, and it's like, well, just shake it. Well, I didn't do anything wrong. Why do I have to shake his hand? You know? And
you want me to shake hands with somebody that's being mean to me? That's what they're thinking in their head.
Right.
Yes.
And it's totally the wrong message, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but if if he stands there with both feet firmly planted on the ground and puts his hands out and says, let's just get past this, and smiles at him and puts his hand out, he's going to take that other kid totally by surprise.
Exactly.
And when he does that, he's got the upper hand.
Right. Mm-hmm. But not if he's being told to do it because then he loses that edge.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But and I love we were talking about respect. This is one of the things that is grossly missing in society today. And the whole thing is that, yes, you do have to earn respect. But the way I live life, and the reason I use myself as an example sometimes is because I'm a very happy person. I genuinely love people. I genuinely get along with, I would say, the vast majority of people, you know, with very,
mm-hmm.
very good. And when there's somebody I don't get along with, I realize it's not me. It's their issues, and I really don't get offended by it. It's like if that's their
mm-hmm.
issue.
You know,
but for the vast majority of people that I come across, I genuinely like and I genuinely get along with. But whenever I meet anybody for the first time, I always extend respect to somebody, whether they're younger
mm-hmm.
than me, older than me, man, woman, it doesn't make any difference.
I always extend
respect, all right, and until somebody shows me behavior that retracts that from me. And again, that's
mm-hmm.
very rare because it really would take a lot for me to just, like, not respect somebody. But for the most
mm-hmm.
part, I respect people, and because they can sense I respect them, they respect me back. So,
mm-hmm.
yes, it does have to be earned, but it's very easy to earn it by being sincere, acting with integrity and honesty, and that's it. And I had actually made a comment one night, and I still stand by that. I think it is easier to live with honesty, integrity, and decency because I think it just makes life easier. Because when you live that way, you really remove a lot of drama from your life. I watch
mm-hmm.
people around me, and I watch these drama, and I'm unaffected by them because I don't get in the middle of it, but I see it going on around me, and I'm like, oh, my God, people just really overcomplicate their lives by trying to work an angle or manipulate somebody. And if they would just sit back and relax and just kind of very calmly put out there what they were looking for, they would find out that things would work out for them much better if they didn't try to manipulate people in situations. And people create so much drama in their lives by not just being open and honest and living with integrity. It actually makes things easier for you, not more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think that's something that's a mindset that needs to be taught more because so many people operate with trying to, like I said, work angles or something. And I think it's from the top down. It's because they see the authority figures in their life doing that or they see their parents doing that or whatever. And it actually puts out a very wrong message. And just simple respect and acting with honesty and integrity goes a long way with making your life easier and the life of everybody that you affect easier.
Well, that's exactly how I feel about it as well, and it's so much easier on you, period. When you lead your life respecting, first of all, yourself,
mm-hmm.
things always get a lot easier. If you have respect for yourself, the respect that you pay to others comes a lot easier as well. So that's who you'd start with first. And once you gain control over that, then it's much easier to extend a mutual respect for the other people in your life. And, of course, that is a big thing also to teach to our children.
Mm-hmm.
And on this observance, too, of the whole story, I also feel very strongly about that, and of course you know that because that's always
yep.
been one of my pet peeves in the workplace, and it is so important. And I don't, it may come from growing up with brothers and sisters and standing by and seeing one of them say this about the other one and the other one say the same thing about the other one, and I would be standing there knowing the truth and knowing neither one of them was telling the truth. And,
wow.
Just to see which one could get in the most trouble. And because that's the way kids are with each other. And I think I mentioned one night on the show that was my mother's routine. Barbara and I are 19 months apart. If I told on Barbara, tattled on her, Barbara got a nickel. If Barbara tattled on me, I got a nickel. And my mother's thought process on that was that we'd be so mad at each other, we didn't want the other one to get a nickel, so we quit tattling on each other.
I love it.
And it worked. It really worked.
Oh,
and I do think, though, that in a child's world, that's a part of the growing up, and that's a part of the things that you go through. But the whole idea that we're there with them is to, again, point them in the right direction when they're doing things like that. And if nobody's ever pointing, then a child is left up to their own discretion as to which way is the right way to go.
Right,
and,
right.
And again, and let me be the first to say that even sometimes when you are there pointing the right direction, that doesn't mean that's the way they're going to go.
Exactly.
Let me make that perfectly clear. So, I mean, because it just isn't. I mean, we're born with our own thought process. We're born with our own mind. And a lot of times that develops at a very early age. I mean, I've met some 3-year-olds that, you know, almost intimidate me a little bit because they're just like so right on cue. So you never know. But it still is your job as a parent, as an adult, and as a leader in your circle to make sure that you do what you think is right and what you think is best for the people that you're looking out for. But now,
well, you have to lead by example, which is one of the things you said, and then that was one of the things we were talking about, is that people have to start being role models again. I mean, you know, when you're talking 50 years ago, or probably even a little bit longer than that, all right, there were a lot of role models. Parents were role models for their kids, and there were stars and characters that were bigger than life. There were role models, and they were always very moralistic and very brave, and they always did the right things and lived with integrity and all that. And then somewhere along the lines, that whole role model ideal kind of lost its emphasis. And
okay, but let's talk about that for a minute. Let's talk about that for a minute. That's a interesting fact that you just said, and of course I agree with that. I think that we lost a lot of that. But why do you think that is? Why do you think?
Well, I think one of the observations that I've made, and I think it's starting to turn around finally, but there was a period of time there, probably a couple of decades, where parents wanted to be friends with their kids. There was almost like a generation of parents that looked to be friends with their children instead of parents, because maybe they grew up in a generation where things were too strict or restrictive, and they were like, well, I'm not going to be that hard on my kids, but it backfired. So instead of being parental, they ended up with a generation of kids that literally walk all over their parents, didn't behave properly, because the pendulum swung too much the other way. Came out of an era of great strictness and things like that to an era of way too, lax or no rules, lax rules or no rules with kids that really kind of tell their parents what they want and just get it. A lot of it comes from too much materialism. You know, I mean, I see 8-year-old kids walking around with iPods, for God's sake. Hello? You know, an 8-year-old can't appreciate that. An 8-year-old has, you know, I mean, this is the technology age. I get it. But kids are expecting these things. They're not taught to appreciate them. And so I think that there's a disconnect there where the parents have kind of lost their roles, and it's almost like the kids are making demands and the parents feel obligated to respond to these demands, because society is almost teaching the kids to be demanding. So it's like everything's got to turn 180 degrees, and it has to start with the family controlling how their children are influenced by the media and other children. You know, just because the media is putting these things out there in shows and in commercials and stuff, doesn't mean that you have to respond to your kid when they start making demands to you. You're still the parent. You're still the breadwinner of the family. You're still the one providing for them, and you should demand respect from your children. And there is a way of doing that and still being loving, all right? So I think that's where some of the disconnect is coming from.
Well, and I agree. I agree with everything you just said, but my biggest thing, and I have said that about some of my own family members. I've said that about myself, wanting to feel like you're staying close to your child. When you have a really good relationship with your children when they're really small, it's very difficult to get through the years where they don't need you anymore. And parents slide down this kind of like, it's kind of like a hill of regret. What did I miss? What did I forget to say? How did I not watch that ball game? How was I not there that day? And so then they start rushing to make everything up, and the kids really don't care about that at that point in time. That's really self-serving for the parent, and I understand that because I know I did that myself, and it came from a good place. But it wasn't necessary, and it didn't really impress any of them either. Most of the time, they just look at you and roll their eyes. So, but one of the things that bothers me when we talk about role models is the role models that are out there in the outside world. And it's the lack of respect that is given to those people. I've talked about this on this show, and I've talked about this on many occasions with my grandchildren, with my children. I find it deplorable that people can put pictures or caricatures or anything like that, or cartoon figures of the President of the United States on the front page of the newspaper or on Facebook or on Twitter. I find it deplorable that people can ridicule or pass judgment on the leader of the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's even bring it further down the totem pole. I find it, there's cartoon shows out now where the parents look like a couple of idiots.
Yep, I know exactly which one you're talking about.
The parents are like, oh my God. I even said to AJ, I said, can you imagine your mother or your father doing that? And he just laughs and he says, Graham, it's a cartoon. Well, that's my AJ. But what is that doing to somebody else? There is no guarded respect for people that are in positions that everybody else can critique and talk about how they could do it better.
Right.
The Pope, and I'm only going to touch on this because it's a very sensitive subject and everybody gets excited about it and everything. Here's a man who's done this for his life and dedicated his life to this. And now there's all this talk about all the priests and all the bishops and all these guys that are pedophiles, and that somebody said to me the other day, well, aren't all priests gay? I said, excuse me? That's the truth. I had a teenager say that to me. Well, I thought that's why they became priests, because they were gay.
Oh,
geez. And I said, no.
Oh.
the whole idea of becoming a priest and a nun is that you dedicate your life to the church and to the to the spreading of the word of belief and goodness and kindness. And if you marry someone else in a lot of Catholicism, then it takes away from what you can do for the church. And people are careful to say it's not about doing it for God. He doesn't really need us to do anything. It's about here on earth making sure that everybody understands what it's about. So, but a 17-year-old said to me, I thought all priests were gay.
Wow.
So now here we have the Pope, who's just been brought into Popeism, And he has to answer for the sins of all these other men who are mere mortals, I want to mention. Just because they decided to become priests didn't mean that all of a sudden they were some kind of saint walking on earth.
Right.
So again, is it terrible? Yes. Any part of it that's true hurts my heart. But on the same token, when you have to answer for all these other people and you get no respect from the rest of the congregation, that makes it kind of hard to do what you need to do, doesn't it?
Right.
Kind of puts you in a place where, you know, it's kind of a no-win situation. And then what happens is then the respect dwindles, very, very slowly dwindles. And the same with the president. President of the United States of America. I'll never be president. Will you ever be president, Shel?
I don't think so.
I mean, you know, that's pretty prestigious. That means somebody's worked pretty hard. Yes, spent a lot of money, which is another thing we could get into sometime. But it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of responsibility. And yet still, people sitting at a bar can discuss all the mistakes he makes.
Well, first of all, the president got voted in twice, okay?
Yep.
It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a dictatorship or a self-appointment. He was actually voted in twice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I unlike a lot of people think, he doesn't make decisions in a vacuum. There's a whole team of people. There's a whole cabinet behind him. He's not doing this all by himself. There's a whole
exactly.
bunch of other people involved in every decision that is made by the president. All right? You have a Congress, you have a Senate. I mean, it's like, this isn't Unitarian. He's not making
right.
these decisions by himself. So, all right, you know, so how do you rip him apart as a single man, like he's responsible for everything that's falling apart? Hello?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I wish.
That never has made any sense to me.
No, I wish I could explain it. And again, it doesn't mean that I'm not saying that because he won the presidency, I mean, it's what happened, and maybe you didn't vote for him. Maybe he's not your favorite. Maybe he doesn't believe in the same things you believe in. That's your right. But it still doesn't set a very good precedent to rake him over the coals, belittle him, badger him, and bully him.
That's right.
What are you teaching the kids? The ones that you're all complaining about for their behavior. What are you teaching them when you can't even forgive the fact that the person you wanted to be the president isn't the president, so now you're going to ridicule the one that is? I mean, how mature is that?
Well, of course. You know.
And that's what bothers
that,
me.
Right. There's a lot of that insensitive humor out today, and it doesn't appeal to me because it is unkind. But like I said, you know, I'm an adult, and I can hear, you know, like some of these shock jocks that are out, or some of the adult cartoons that are out that kids can watch anyway. You know, they're on late at night, but any kid can turn on the TV and see them, you know. And I can see something, and I can see the sarcasm in it, and I can see the humor in it. It's not my cup of tea, but I can see the humor in it. The problem is that when kids watch these things, they're not done yet. So they can't watch it with discernment. They can't watch it and be a little offended and still laugh at it and say, well, you know, that was kind of, you know, that humor is a little out there, but you know, you can see the humor in it. No, they just think it's funny, and it desensitizes them because they don't
mm-hmm.
have the maturity or the discernment to realize that they should have been offended by it. I can be offended by something and still laugh at it a little bit and then just say, well, that was a little tasteless, where a kid doesn't even go that far. They don't even have any reaction to it. They just see that it's supposed to be funny, and then they think that that's humorous, and it's really not, and it teaches almost a lack of sensitivity. So some of the unkindness is coming from this type of humor that is very prevalent today, and
mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that it starts, you know, dropping off, because I think that it sends out a really bad message, I don't even think it's good for adults to be that insensitive either.
I don't either.
Well,
and it's incredibly mean-spirited. Let's face it.
Yep.
No matter how you want to cut it, if because somebody isn't doing things your way or the way you believe that they should be done, then step up to the plate. Run for president.
That's right.
Really.
What is the old saying? If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So if
amen.
You sit there and bitch, whine, and complain, you're
mm-hmm.
not part of the solution. You're part of the problem if that's all you have to offer. You know?
That's right.
Come up with a solution. If you're so upset about the way things are being done, then write to your Congress, write to your Senate, you know, go to community meetings and start offering suggestions on how to make it better. And if you can't, then you really don't have the right to bitch, whine, and complain.
Well, isn't that what I said when I first started this radio show?
I said,
everybody said, why are you doing that? And I said, because I've been bitching about all these things that I think are wrong. So I said, if I can bitch about them, I should be able to step up and try to do something about them. And
right.
I believe that as well. I believe wholeheartedly that everybody has to work towards an end.
Exactly. We were talking about one night about how throughout history, small grassroots groups were able to change the tide of major injustices through history, and sometimes it was started by one person against
mm-hmm.
tens of thousands, and then it just grew into a movement that finally turned the tide on some of the worst injustices throughout history, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's
mm-hmm.
like, this is how things start. If you want things to change, first of all, clean up your own act, do things right with everybody that you come in contact with, live
mm-hmm.
honestly and with integrity with everybody that comes into your circle of influence, and if everybody started doing that, you know what? Things would just straighten out on their own. If everybody just took care of their own housekeeping and the way they lived, things would eventually just fix anyway, because then you'd have people influencing other people in a very positive way.
That's right. That's exactly right. And, you know, my favorite thing, of course, and I'm sure everybody that's listened at least twice has heard me say it. Everybody lives in a glass house. You shouldn't throw stones. I mean, and if you do know somebody who's perfect, again, please introduce them to me, because I've never met anyone that's perfect. And I also believe that teaching a child that the imperfections in people are what make them endearing. And
right.
the quicker you learn how to, again, embrace the differences of others,
mm-hmm.
the happier person you're going to be, and the happier
mm-hmm.
people are going to be around you.
That's
I mean,
right.
this goes with everything. I mean, you know, I'm friends with a lot of people on Facebook that fight for gay rights. And I'm not gay. I never considered it. I always felt comfortable in my own skin. I always wished there was less of it, but I've always been comfortable in it. But I have a tremendous amount of respect for people who, at a very early age, know that something is different about them. And instead
mm-hmm.
of feeling freaky or like somebody did them a major injustice, they embrace it and become who
right.
they are. Now,
right.
for me, that takes a big chunk of courage,
mm-hmm.
and it takes a lot of fortitude. And today, it's a lot easier than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and certainly 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But today, it's still difficult, and there's still the flapping jaws of people who don't know any better, apparently, and cause a lot of damage to those people that have decided that you know, something's different. I don't fall into the mold that you fall into. And why not respect that? Because you don't. Do you think people feel that way about geniuses? Because there's not very many of us that are geniuses. Do you think they feel that way about a genius? Or do you think they accept a genius and applaud a genius? It's the same thing. You know, there's some different things going on inside.
Right.
And somebody is like this incredible bright star, and that's acceptable. But it's still different than us. So if you can embrace some differences, it seems like you should be able to embrace all of them and have respect for the people who don't want to live in a world of make-believe. They want to live in the world that was provided for them.
Right, right. And the whole thing is that it's actually not even a decision. It's a realization, because it's a realization of their orientation. So the choice and the decision actually even comes off the table. And that's something else when you talk about respect, is that, like people that are oriented that way, they look at heterosexuals and they're confused because they don't understand that orientation, you know. But they don't
exactly.
They don't take an attitude towards it. You know, it's the same thing. And one of the things that I find confusing, I've never been this way my entire life, is why people are so concerned with what other people do with their lives when it has no effect on them. Now, it's different if somebody's doing something that can potentially harm you in some way. I mean, obviously, if somebody has a particular lifestyle that can be threatening, they're going out, they're getting drunk every night, and then speeding around town where they could injure or kill somebody, then it's sort of your business. But except for behavior like that, there's very little that people can do that ever affect you. So if somebody has an orientation that's their personal business, all right, that has to do with who they may choose as a partner, it has no effect on you being friends with them. It has no effect on their ability to be intelligent or kind or decent or living with integrity. It has nothing to do with them being a good employee. It has nothing to do with anything. But people will take that particular personality attribute and almost hold it against them for other things that it has zero effect on.
Yeah.
Now, or somebody's religious beliefs, or somebody's
I can't say that for you. Authenticity. Authenticity? Yeah,
I think that's it.
Yeah. Well, that's just like the when you look at somebody who's different than you, but you see them as being the emotions that run with people when they see the differences in each other. You run into a Bo Derek and you think, oh my God, how'd she get all this and I got all this? You know, and then there's jealousy. And then you play off that if you're that kind of person. Or you run into somebody who's struggling because of some kind of an impairment or something, and then you lord it over them because you feel so much luckier than you think they are. You know, it's not easy to gain control of those kind of feelings, and it's not easy to understand that even though you may have had them a couple different times, you're not supposed to attach yourself to them. I'm not going to say that those kind of feelings are abnormal for everybody, because I don't think they are. I think it is a part of human nature to look at somebody and be jealous, or look at somebody and feel sorry for them, or look at somebody and automatically, think you care about them. All those kind of emotions, I think, happen to everybody. But the point is that you're supposed to have enough of a head on your shoulders to analyze things and understand the difference between what's right and what's wrong. And you should be able to teach that, again, to the people that you're in charge of. And I think that's missing, today.
That goes with something that you and I had discussed once before, where it's not so much the thoughts that we entertain, because, like you said, they are part of our nature. I've entertained thoughts of, you know, like, oh, well, you know, why does that person have so much and I'm struggling or something like that, you know, that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people go through that. But
yeah.
The difference is that like you said, analyzing it, being able to not let it take you over, looking at it and saying, well, that's kind of silly. Now, why are you even going there? And, you know, and self-talk, and I do this with myself, you know. It's like, well, you know, this person,
so do
I'm happy with them. You know what? And when you're happy for someone else's good fortune, it actually makes you feel light, more lighthearted, and it can actually open the door for you to maybe experience some of that on your own. When you harbor ill will towards other people for the good they have, you almost stifle it from ever happening for you. So so from a very selfish standpoint, you shouldn't allow yourself to entertain thoughts like that, you know. But it's not so much what thoughts you allow to pop into your head, it's what thoughts you allow to stay there and drive your actions and drive
exactly.
The type of person you are.
Exactly.
Right? So, yes,
exactly.
Analyzing them, putting them in check, and kind of working them out in a way that allows you to have a kinder attitude towards that person and towards yourself.
Maybe using a little of Izzy's idea, and that's laughing at yourself.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
it puts you in a position of just, like, not taking things so freaking seriously.
Yeah.
You know? And that's another way that we do a disservice to ourselves and others is, oh, my God, people take things so seriously that really aren't. And they end up turning a comment or a situation into something that it really isn't, and they turn it into something bad when it could literally be just brushed off by a simple act of the judge.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, a very simple, what am I thinking, does it for me a lot of times. You know,
yeah.
I mean, seriously, you know, like, what am I thinking? So, and again, you know, but like you said, and like I said, it's all about putting it in its place and evaluating it and seeing that it's not a good place to be. It's the wrong place to be and getting out of
right.
there. It's getting close to, signing off, and somebody sent me a very funny story, so I'm going to read it to you to end the show tonight.
Excellent.
Two bored casino dealers are waiting at the craps table when a very attractive blonde woman from Tennessee arrived. She bet $20,000 on a single roll of the dice. She said, "I hope you don't mind, but I feel much luckier when I play topless." With that, she stripped to the waist, rolled the dice, and yelled, "Come on, baby, Southern girl needs some new clothes." As the dice came to a stop, she jumped up and down and squealed, "Yes, yes, I won. She hugged each one of the dealers, then picked up her winnings and her clothes and quickly departed. The dealers stared at each other, dumbfounded. Finally, one of them asked, "What did she roll?" The other answered, "I don't know. I thought you were watching."
Oh, I love that.
Moral of the story, not all Southerners are stupid, not all blondes are dumb, but all men are men. Don't you love it? Somebody sent it to me this afternoon. I said, oh, this is just too cute. I have to read this on the show. Okay, so it's time to sign off. And I'm glad we laughed our way out tonight. That's always nice when we talk about such serious subjects. So we are still working on the event. I don't want everybody to forget about that. And as soon as we have a bona fide date, everyone will know right away. And on that note, I want to say good night and thank Shelly for being here with me tonight. And I love all of you. And from my heart to yours, have a great night. God bless. And talk to you tomorrow. Good night, Miss Shelly.
Good night, Renee. Good night, everyone.